He turns his large eyes up at her.
I'm only trying to help you, you know,
she says softly to him, reaching out to pat his cheek. That's what your mom and dad were hoping for when they signed you up. They wanted this for you. Do you know that? That's why you're here. His small fingers close so tightly around the tail of his scarf that even in the recording, I can see his knuckles turning white. Sasuke casts a reluctant glance back at the room before he follows Taylor and the researcher out. The door shuts again, returning the space to darkness. My hand comes up to cover my mouth. While Hideo's parents searched frantically for him, while Hideo lost his own childhood fixated on his brother's disappearance, Sasuke was being held here against his own will. The next scene opens back in the testing room. This time, Sasuke is sitting alone at one of the desks with his head resting on his arms. He's staring blankly off into space. When he shifts, I notice a telltale pinprick on the bend of his left arm. A thin stripe of hair has been shaved off the side of his head, and there, near his temple, I see another pinprick. The door opens. A girl steps in, whom I now recognize as young Jax. She sees him, hesitates, and then twirls one of her pigtails around her finger. She takes a seat next to him. Hey, she says. He doesn't say a word. He doesn't even seem to notice her in the same room. When he stays silent, Jax bites her lip and nudges his arm. Sasuke lifts his head to glare at her. What do you want? He mutters. Jax blinks at him. I'm Jackson Taylor. Oh, you're the daughter. Sasuke looks away again and puts his head down. I remember you from the study. Jax scowls and puts her hands on her waist. Mom said you might like some company your own age for a change. Tell your mom I'm not interested in whatever she's thinking up. He pauses to give her a skeptical look. You don't look all that sick. She smiles at him. The drug study they were doing on us, it's been working really well on me. Mom says it's a miracle. Sasuke stares at her for a second longer before turning away again. Good for you. Hey, it's slowed down your disease, too. Maybe you're turning into a bunch of supercells. That's what my mom said. She said the study helped 10% of us. She hesitates. Her eyes wander to the shaved stripe along the side of his head. What are they injecting you for? Sasuke rests his head against his arms and closes his eyes. Why don't you ask your mom? He mutters. Jax doesn't say anything. Her cheeks flush in apology. When she still doesn't reply, Sasuke looks up and sees her expression. He sighs. After a moment, he seems to take pity on her. Trackers, he explains. They need it in my bloodstream. That was the injection. They said it's preparation for my procedures. Oh, she studies his face. You don't look so good. He goes back to closing his eyes. Go away. My stomach hurts and I feel sick. Jax stares at him as he breathes evenly in and out. After a while, she straightens to leave. I was going to ask if you wanted to check out this hidden nook I found, up near the Institute's ceiling. And my mom doesn't know about that. She starts to walk away. There's a metal grate that's open to the fresh air. It might make you feel better. As she goes, Sasuke lifts his head to look at her retreating figure. Hang on, he says. When she turns back around, he clears his throat, suddenly shy. Where is it? Jax smiles and tilts her head. I'll show you. I'm not supposed to leave the room. Jax winks at him. No one tied you down, did they? Now come on. She steps out the door, and a second later, he scoots his chair back and follows her. There are several scenes like this one, each showing the two of them hanging out in the empty study room, or in the hallways, or in the back shelves of the Institute's library. One scene is from Jax's point of view. She's kneeling on the tiles of a bathroom floor, gently patting Sasuke's back as he throws up over and over again into a toilet. Another is of Sasuke making funny faces at her until she bursts out giggling. Yet another is of them crammed into a tiny wedge of space together, over which a metal grate exposes a square of the night sky. Jax seems lost in thought, absently pointing out one constellation after another. She stops talking long enough to glance over at Sasuke, only to see him staring at her instead of the stars. He turns his head hurriedly away, but not before she catches the blush on his cheeks. She grins. Then she gets serious.
"Hey, do you know what a kiss is?"
she asks him. He shakes his head.
"You mean, like a kiss from my mom?"
"No, silly. Gross."
Jax laughs before steeling herself.
"I mean the kind you give to someone you like," she murmurs. "In that way."
Then she leans over and presses her lips quickly and quietly to his cheek before jerking away. Sasuke stares wide-eyed at her, his face pink in the night.
"Oh,"
he says hoarsely.
"I saw it on TV,"
Jax replies. She laughs nervously, a little too loud, and it makes Sasuke laugh in return. He kisses her cheek back. It makes her giggle even harder. Soon the two have dissolved into quiet laughter. I look away to the Jax standing beside me. She nods toward her younger self.
"These are my memories,"
she says to me as we continue to look on. Taylor had them recorded and archived after the Neuralink came out. In a third one, both of them look a little older. They're sitting in front of a TV, an older model that probably dates back at least 7 or 8 years. And on the screen, a 13-year-old Hideo is walking out onto a press stage to be greeted by an avalanche of flashing lights. He looks so unsure of himself at that age, lanky and shy-eyed, his clothes baggy and ill-fitting, his demeanor little more than a passing resemblance to the man he would become. He greets the reporters with a nervous wave. Sasuke grips Jax's arm. For an instant, the smile on his face is a genuine one.
"That's my brother, Jax," he exclaims, pointing at the screen. "There, he's on TV. You see him? Look at him. He's so much taller."
His eyes are wide open, shiny with new tears, fixated on the TV as if terrified the broadcast will stop.
"Don't I look like him? Do you think he's looking for me? Do you think he's thinking about me?"
He still cared for his brother then. I tear my gaze away. It's too hard to watch. Beside me, Jax watches with a grim calmness. "It was part of Taylor's study, you know, letting him watch the TV," she says.
"Why?"
I ask. Jax only nods as the scene ends and another starts to play.
"You'll see."
Sasuke is crouching back in the same dark bedroom in the next scene. He's thinner this time, alarmingly so, his arms whittled down to sharp limbs and his eyes hauntingly large in his small face. How many years has it been? His illness must be eating away at him. This time, when the door opens, he sits up straight and stares sidelong at Taylor.
"How do you feel today, Sasuke?"
Taylor asks him. Sasuke is quiet, his child eyes regarding her with a look of suspicion beyond his years. His hands are still clutching the blue scarf. Then, he says,
"I'll make a deal with you."
These stern words coming from such a small boy makes Taylor laugh.
"Let me skip today and I'll eat my dinner."
Now the woman laughs in earnest. When she finally stops, she shakes her head at Sasuke.
"I'm afraid not. You can't skip a day. You know that."
Sasuke gives her a thoughtful look.
"Let me skip, and I'll give you my scarf."
At that, Taylor regards him with a curious smile.
You love that scarf, she says in a coaxing voice. We can't even pry it from you in your sleep. Surely you can't be serious, giving it up just for a day off.
I'm serious, Sasuke says.
I lean forward, unable to tear my attention away from the exchange. Taylor walks over to Sasuke, stares down at him for a moment, and then holds out a hand. The scarf, she says.
My free day,
Sasuke replies, his hands still tight around the cloth.
You have my word. You won't be at the labs today. We won't bother you. Take your time and rest here. Tomorrow we'll start again.
Sasuke stares at her. Finally, his fingers loosen on the scarf. When she takes it, I can see Sasuke's hands visibly tremble, as if it took all of his strength not to lunge for the scarf right then and there. But he hands it over, without making so much as a sound. Taylor looks at the scarf, then tightens her hands around it, and turns to leave the room.
We'll see you the day after tomorrow, Sasuke-kun, she says over her shoulder. I'm proud of you.
Sasuke doesn't reply, and he doesn't cry. He doesn't crouch like he did in the first video I saw of him either. He just stares calmly, carefully, as Taylor leaves the room, closing the door softly behind her. When it clicks shut, Sasuke's shoulders droop. His hands clutch instinctively for the scarf that is no longer around his neck. When I look closer, I realize that he's wiping tears away. Then he jumps up to his feet, walks up to the security cam, and breaks it. I startle. The tape buzzes with static. When it plays again, I see Sasuke struggling wildly in bonds in a coldly lit room. Nearby is Taylor, watching him with a calm, cool expression.
And who helped you try to escape, Sasuke-kun? Taylor asks.
Sasuke doesn't look at her. His eyes are fixed instead on the door leading out of the room, like he might be able to will himself out of the lab. When Taylor walks over to him, standing purposely between him and the door, his eyes finally shift up to the woman.
Who helped you try to escape, Sasuke?
She repeats. Sasuke stays quiet. When he still doesn't answer, Taylor shakes her head and motions for one of her researchers to bring a young girl forward. My eyes widen. She has shorter hair here, but she is unmistakably Jax. She follows the researcher obediently to stand beside her mother, and the sight of Jax in such a frightened state is so odd that I can hardly believe it's her.
Did Jackson help you?
Taylor asks, still in that cool, calm tone. Sasuke shakes his head again, although now his eyes are on Jax. I walk invisibly around in the recording, noticing how Sasuke's leather bonds are stretched tight now, his arms so tense that I can see a vein standing out against his skin. He still doesn't answer. Taylor nods once at the others. As I look on, they loosen Sasuke's bonds so that his wrists and ankles are suddenly free. Sasuke doesn't even hesitate. He bolts upright and leaps off the table, his eyes narrowed at the door. But the others are already moving too. Taylor reaches for young Jax's wrist, drags her forward, and pulls her toward the same bench that Sasuke had been strapped to only moments earlier.
Come here, my love, Taylor says to her.
This movement is the only thing that makes Sasuke freeze near the door. Jax whimpers, too afraid to run, as her mother ushers her up onto the bench.
You want to leave so badly, don't you, Sasuke?
Taylor says soothingly to him as a researcher begins to wipe Jax's temples with a damp cloth. Sasuke watches with a frozen expression. It takes me a moment to recognize that expression as fear. Temptation. Guilt.
Then go. Die out there instead of letting us save you.
Taylor says, turning her back on Sasuke and focusing her attention now on Jax.
You aren't the only patient we have in our ranks, and your progress has been slower than I would have expected. If you're unwilling to cooperate, then I'll simply have to replace you with someone else. Jax has always been the alternative for our study. The girl stares at Sasuke with a desperate expression, but doesn't plead. Instead, she shakes her head. Go, she seems to be insisting. Taylor turns around to meet Sasuke's paralyzed gaze.
Well, the doors are unlocked. What are you waiting for?
And for a moment, it really does look like Sasuke will make a run for it. There are no guards stopping him, no one looking his way. Taylor is too far away to catch him. No one will come for him. Not if he runs now. But he stands there and doesn't move. His hands clench and unclench, his eyes darting from the woman to Jax, his expression tight. Taylor sighs.
You're making me impatient, she says, turning back toward Jax.
Sasuke takes a step toward them. The movement is enough to make Taylor pause. Sasuke meets Jax's eyes, then takes another step forward. When he speaks, he tries to keep his voice steady, but I can hear the trembling in it.
She's not a part of the program.
Taylor doesn't move to release her.
You have so much potential, Sasuke, she says. But I need you to choose, and choose decisively. If you want to leave, then leave. We won't come after you. But you know you are the only one this entire experiment hinges on, and what you do could change everything. The results of your study could save millions of lives. It could save your life. We've all worked so hard for you, and here you are, ready to throw it all away.
She gives Sasuke a disappointed look. Even though Sasuke still seems afraid to step forward, I can also see hints of guilt on his face, Taylor's manipulation wrapping around him like a vice. As if he'd suddenly owed this operation something. Like he'd felt obligated to her. But most of all, like whatever happens to Jax will be his fault if he leaves. He meets her gaze now, and I can see traces of that unspoken bond between them. The accumulation of their days spent together, and their nights huddled away in a nook. I find myself wishing silently for Sasuke to turn and run away, to leave it all behind. Of course he doesn't. Instead, I see his shoulders droop again, his head lower ever so slightly, and him take the first steps away from the door and back toward the lab table.
Let her go now, he says to Taylor about Jax.
On the table, Jax shoots a bewildered look at him, some panicked expression telling him not to do it. Taylor smiles.
And you're not going to run.
I'm not going to run.
And you're going to commit to this.
Sasuke hesitates, briefly meeting the woman's eyes.
I will, he replies.
The recording ends. I realize that my heart is beating so fast now that I've had to sit down on the floor of my room. The next scene is dated only a month later, but Sasuke is a little taller, his limbs longer, and his body ganglier. The most noticeable change on him is a single thin strip of black metal now running along the side of his head, where part of his hair has been newly buzzed again. He's back in the same laboratory and answering a series of questions from the same technician who had been working with Taylor before.
State your name.
Sasuke Tanaka.
Your age?
12.
I do the quick calculation. By this point, Hideo was 14, I was 11, and Warcross had already become an international phenomenon, the Neuralink welcomed into millions of households.
Your city of birth?
London.
What is the name of your brother?
Hideo Tanaka.
Your mother?
Mina Tanaka.
The questions go on for a while, a long list of simple facts and details about his life. I watch Sasuke's face as he mentions the names of his loved ones, and for the first time, I notice that he doesn't seem to react to the names. No flinch. No wince. There is recognition that sparks in his eyes, but it is as if he were saying the names of acquaintances instead of his family members. Show him the DV, Taylor says. The technician pauses to switch on the screen. As we look on, the TV plays an interview with Hideo, now gradually growing into his newfound fame. I glance back at Sasuke. Not long ago, he had grabbed Jax's arm and cried at the sight of his brother. Now he watches the interview with some notable interest, although he doesn't seem truly affected by it. It's as if he were fascinated by a celebrity instead of missing his brother. The questions start again.
Who is this?
Hideo Tanaka.
And is he your older brother?
Yes.
Do you miss him?
A hesitation, then a shrug. As he answers each question, the technician observes a series of data appearing on a screen beside him and taps down notes on a pad he's holding. As he goes, he reads out some of his reactions.
0 signs of recognition, still holding steady at 84%. Overall response times have improved by 33%.
The man drones on as Sasuke answers each question. Whatever it is they've been doing to him, they've taken away something. Something real and human. An intonation in his voice and a light in his eyes. Something that defines him as Sasuke. There's no sign of struggle now, and Sasuke seems perfectly willing, if not eager, to do as he's told.
0's cognitive skills are all wholly intact,
the technician finally concludes as the final question happens. Someone injects Sasuke in the arm with a needle, and as I look on, his eyes roll back, his body going limp against the platform. Good, Taylor says with her arms crossed. And what about his reactions to mentions of his family? He's still responding to them with a degree of emotion. That should be tracking down faster than this.
He's holding on harder than I expected. Don't worry. He'll be yours before long, and believe he has always worked for you. We should be all caught up in the next few weeks. He'll be fully downloaded well before he expires.
Before he dies. As the tech talks, I pick up on something else in the recording. Now that the system has been switched to the Neuralink, I'm able to wander around the recording, and I notice something on one of the screens in the room that catches my eye. At the top of it is the same symbol I'd seen on Sasuke's sleeve, and below it is written the following in large letters. Project 0. I head over to it, suddenly afraid of what I might see. Beside me, Jax does the same, talking softly as we go. Project 0 is an artificial intelligence program, she tells me. Over the past few years, artificial intelligence has improved everything from search engines to face recognition, to the ability for a computer to defeat a human at complicated mind games, like Go. But Project 0 is building on that, to install the advances of AI into the human mind, and the human mind into AI. To blend the two, so that we can have all the benefits of a computer's mind, logic, speed, accuracy, and the computer mind can have the benefits of a human's. Gut reactions, imagination, instinct, spontaneity. Taylor is literally separating his mind from his body, downloading his mind into data. She is transferring his mind into a machine that she can control. I sit back, my world spinning, my mind flooding with questions. Why not just stick to the artificial? To installing human instinct into machines? Why destroy a human like this?
What's the end goal of this technology? I whisper to Jax.
Immortality, Jax replies as we go on to a final recording. You know how Taylor fears death? She wants the mind to live on beyond the body. With this technology, she can.
In this one, Sasuke no longer looks like Sasuke, but like the Zero I recognize, standing in the middle of the lab room with his cold, unfeeling gaze. But what did they do to him? I finally ask as I stare at Zero, still puzzled.
He's gone this far. He's being experimented on in this artificial intelligence program. But what's the end result? What can he do now that he was unable to do before?
At that, Jax fixes me with a hollow stare. The end goal is to transform him into nothing but data. I blink.
Data?
Emika, Zero isn't real.
Right as she says it, I see a technician walk straight through Zero, like he's nothing more than a virtual simulation. A hologram. Just like what I'd seen at the lab earlier tonight, when I witnessed him walk right through the glass wall. Blood rushes to my head. That can't be true.
What do you mean he isn't real? I've seen him. He's physically been in my room, in the same space as us. Plenty of times.
Has he?
Jax interrupts me, her eyes distant and bleak.
Zero isn't real. He's an illusion. Sasuke Tanaka's real body died years ago on a lab gurney. What you've seen standing before you is a virtual projection.
Emika, Zero is Sasuke's human mind successfully transmitted into data. He is an artificial intelligence program.
Chapter 21. Zero isn't real. All this time, I thought he was flesh and blood. But he is an illusion, a projection. A virtual image so realistic that I couldn't even tell the difference. That's impossible. The thought bubbles up in my mind, and I feel a desperate urge to laugh at Jax. I must not have understood her. But then, my memories come back to me, faster and faster. The first time I'd ever seen him was in the Pirate's Den, a virtual space. The second time, inside a game of Warcross. The third time, he had been standing in my dorm room, only to vanish when everything exploded. When I arrived at the hotel to meet with him in the black coats, Jax and Taylor had been with him, and he'd been leaning against the wall, not touching anyone. But no, when I saw him standing on the balcony with Jax, hadn't he pressed his hand to her back, pulling her to him? My mind whirls frantically, remembering that moment and searching for a sign that would make this conclusion false. No, Jax had only stood close to him, and he had only bent down near her to whisper something in her ear. I have never touched Zero, and he has never touched me. We have only ever been close to each other, never making physical contact. That cold, artificial look in his eyes is because he is artificial. The realization sends me spinning, and I put a hand out, steadying myself against my desk. Zero isn't real. He is an illusion. Sasuke Tanaka died a long time ago. Jax watches me as the information hits me in waves. There is a haunted expression on her face now. Living eternally inside a machine is something we've always talked about. Isn't it? Only now, Taylor has actually done it. Zero's mind is as accurate and agile as a human mind. In an intellectual capacity, he's every bit the same as he was when he was Sasuke. Only now, Zero can exist anywhere and everywhere. He has no physical form. He does not age. And so long as there is an internet, so long as there are machines, he'll exist forever.
What?
My voice catches, and I have to try again.
What about his memory?
His recognition of his family? Taylor can't have him going off to see them, can she? Reporting to the authorities, Jax replies. She gave him immortality. In exchange, she took away his memory, linking his mind to hers. He does what she wants. He believes what she believes. And when she dies, he'll shut down. Jax has scrolled us onto another file, and I stare numbly as this one shows a detailed list of names. Clients. The military. The medical industrial complex. The 1%. Tech companies, government officials. My mind aches. There are plenty of people eager to benefit from the results of this research. Maybe to make obedient super soldiers, or as a cure for the terminally ill, or whatever it was they needed. Maybe just to live forever.
It's ironic, isn't it?
Jax says in a resigned voice. In a way, Taylor did keep her promise to Mina Tanaka. She saved Sasuke's life by making him permanent. The only price was to kill him. I think back to the Institute. How I watched Zero move in tandem with that armored figure. How his gestures manipulated the machine. What about the robot in the lab? I ask. The one Zero was controlling.
A physical form for him, she replies. He can sync with that machine, as surely as if that were his own body.
He can control one of them. He can control multiple ones if he wants to.
Super soldiers.
Now, imagine this hooked up to the Neuralink. How easily Taylor could replicate this on a massive scale.
But,
I say hoarsely, clearing my throat. Do all these clients, patrons, know how she did this experiment? What it took? Would it matter now if they knew? She shrugs at me. If the end results are this remarkable, would you throw away that research just because the process was unethical? Immoral human experimentation has been around forever, has been performed by your country, by mine, by everyone. You think people don't want the results of this kind of research, regardless of how it's obtained? People ultimately don't care about the journey, if the end is worth it. And what was the price tag here, in exchange for immortality? One life. She's right. If the experiment is exposed, it can be blamed on the black coats, and all of these clients can just point the finger at them, denouncing it as heinous and illegal, while being absolved of any blame for funding the research. But no one would throw away these findings just because Sasuke had died for it.
His parents, I whisper. Sasuke's mom. Did she?
She never knew what happened to him. She knows he disappeared several months after she withdrew him from the program. And I know she nearly killed herself trying to find out what happened to him. But what could she do? People disappear frequently in Japan. There isn't even a national registry that catalogs the missing. Taylor was the director of the Institute. She had the power to hide whatever needed to be hidden, and an accusation this wild would have just made Mina look like a grieving mother gone mad. And what about you? I ask softly. Taylor often hired people as needed for her projects. Most who worked with us weren't exactly upstanding citizens. So as her ambitions grew, she wanted someone like me to enforce her control and protect her. I may not have gone Sasuke's route, but I tested very well for my reflexes. So she had me trained. Jax smiles bitterly. There's the fear in her eyes again. Nothing commands authority like a professional killer. And no killer surprises someone more than a young girl. Even though Jax doesn't say it, I know she still thinks of Taylor as her mother. A cruel one, one who doesn't care about her. But family, nevertheless, it's hard to sever the mind's ties, no matter how painful they are. Taylor had made me believe that she was a force of good, that her mission was still fundamentally moral. The need to rid the world of regimes and technology like Hideo's that sought to control others. But sometimes, the need to protect the world from being controlled translates to seizing control for yourself. Jax pulls us out of the recordings. I glimpse the vast library again, the repository of the Black Coat's secrets, then at the Dark World's Fair, and then the streets of the Dark World itself. Then, we leave the virtual space, and I return to my room, lit only by slices of moonlight and street lamps. The virtual image of Jax is still here, standing beside me as I lean against my bed for support. "Why are you telling me all this?" I say to her. "You're risking your own life." Her expression, as always, doesn't waver. "Because I don't believe Sasuke's completely gone." She pauses, but her eyes go straight to me. My thoughts are already racing. The specific memory that Zero had shown me when he'd taught me how to break into Hideo's mind. Zero had said that he didn't mean for me to see it. But what if Sasuke had? From some corner deep in Zero's mind. "The symbol," I whisper to Jax. "The memory of Sasuke in that room." She only nods back. "I don't think it was an accident that Zero let you into that memory. I think Sasuke did it." The hopeful way she says his name is a sharp contrast to her usual curt tone. To her, Sasuke is still alive. No wonder she will never try to kill Taylor. Not while Sasuke might still be trapped inside Zero's mind. Jax suddenly looks to her side, her expression focused again. She listens for a while. I tense, wondering what it is she's hearing and where she is in reality right now. Then she leans close to me. "Listen carefully," she says at a rapid clip. "Zero is fully under Taylor's control. By nature of his programming, he must listen to her commands and obey whatever she says. You need to get access to Hideo's algorithm. But once you do, you can't let Taylor get hold of it. If you can use the algorithm to force Taylor to give up control of Zero's mind, you can free Zero from her." I study Jax's face as she talks. The abrupt urgency and uncertainty in her voice jar me. Right now, she doesn't sound like a ruthless assassin, but a small girl, terrified of her keeper. "Like the rest of us, Taylor's wearing beta lenses. They aren't connected to the algorithm." She reaches into her pocket and pulls out a small box. "But they will be, for a moment, right after you get access to Hideo's algorithm during the closing ceremony." She's right. In the split second after Taylor's beta lenses hook into the algorithm, and before her code installs her as the algorithm's master, she'll be vulnerable to Hideo seizing control over her mind. "We're going to have just 1 second to do this," I tell her. Then I add to myself, "and only if I can persuade Hideo to cooperate." Jax nods. "It'll be the most important second in history. If this goes wrong, my own beta lenses will be hooked up into the algorithm too. I'll be under Taylor's control instead of Hideo's. All of us will. I try not to think about what Taylor would do with that level of power, what she would turn us into. What happens after we free Zero from her?" I say after a while. "That library I showed you. It contains everything. Remember? Every study and experiment that Taylor has ever done. It also contains every iteration of Sasuke Tanaka's mind during every stage of his trial. At that, she holds out a compressed set of data to hover between us. I don't need to say a word to know that this contains those records.
You need a way straight into Zero's mind. Download all of Sasuke's memories back into Zero. Zero has no desire to go against Taylor, but Sasuke might.
Use the algorithm to save Hideo's brother. It's a plan that will almost certainly go wrong. But I still nod at Jax. We'll do it.
Jax jerks her head away from me again, as if she's heard something. In a flash, any trace of weakness vanishes from her face.
I have to go, she whispers to me. She meets my gaze one final time. Then she disconnects, and I'm suddenly alone again in my room. It's dead quiet in here now. The contrast is startling. I remain leaning against my bed in the silence. The recordings I'd seen run through my head repeatedly, refusing to disappear. I bring them up again, one by one, each file that Jax had given me. The images of Sasuke, all his memories, circle me in a halo. This is the key I've been looking for. Slowly, a plan begins to take shape.
Chapter 22. I barely sleep that night. Every time I close my eyes, all I see is Sasuke as a young boy in that room, tears running down his face. I see him kissing Jax, screaming as he's strapped down for his procedures. The memories fuse with each other, creating new, twisted ones. There's Jax standing with Zero on her balcony, her face turned up to him, him leaning down to kiss her neck. Jax turns into me, Zero into Hideo. We're back in that glass tower, lying in his bed. His head snaps back as Taylor shoots him. He transforms into Tremaine as he crumples to the floor. Then I jolt awake, crying, my body damp with sweat. I'm too scared to go back to sleep, so instead, I sit awake in bed and fiddle with the glowing cube that Zero had given me, the hack that will get me into Hideo's mind. Use the algorithm to force Taylor to give up control of Zero. Will Hideo go along with this? To allow someone else access into his algorithm? Even Zero had refused to reveal himself to his brother, knowing how unpredictable his reaction might be. There's no guarantee that Hideo will even believe me. But Sasuke is buried somewhere inside the monster that Taylor has created. If there's even the slightest chance that we can rescue him, I have to believe that Hideo will hear me out. And if he doesn't, I'll have to hack into his mind. Force him. I study the data until dawn streams into my room. The instant the light shifts from blue to gold, an incoming call pings in my view. I jump, thinking it might be from Zero himself, that he or Taylor has figured out what Jax has done. But it's from Roshan. I accept the call, and his hoarse voice fills my ears, telling me what I already know.
Tremaine's in the hospital, he says. He's hurt pretty bad.
His words falter a little.
Em, he'd listed me as his emergency contact. That's why the doctor called me. I can't.
I can hardly bear the pain in his voice. My hands shake in my lap as he gives me the name of the hospital. On my way, I whisper, and dart out of my bed before he responds. A half hour later, I arrive at the hospital to find Roshan and a doctor locked in conversation, the latter trying in vain to explain to Roshan that he can't visit Tremaine yet.
We've been out here for hours,
Roshan's voice echoes down the hall.
You said we'd be able to see him over an hour ago.
He's shouting in Japanese at a doctor, his translated words appearing in a mad dash in my view. Beside him, Hammy and Asher stay unnaturally quiet, not bothering to stop him. He must have lost his temper already earlier.
I'm sorry, Mr. Amadi,
the doctor explains, giving him a small bow of apology.
But you are not Mr. Blackburn's legal spouse. Unless you have an official certificate, you will need to wait with your friends until we can allow you to visit.
We're a couple, Roshan snaps, forgetting in the heat of the moment that that's no longer true. Didn't you all pass a same-sex marriage law last year?
But you are not currently married,
the doctor counters.
Are you? Do you have papers?
Roshan throws his hands up and storms back toward the waiting room where I stand. Behind him, Asher and Hammy exchange a quick glance. Roshan catches sight of me as he walks, then gives me a quick nod. My heart sits in my throat as I reach them. Roshan looks pale and haggard, and his eyes are bloodshot.
Why weren't you with him? He snaps at me. They said he was dropped off at the hospital alone.
Roshan's anger stabs me hard through the chest. I start to offer excuses, that I couldn't reach him, that the Black Coats had figured out Tremaine hacked their databases. But this isn't what Roshan needs to hear.
I should have been there, I managed to choke out. It's my fault this happened to him. He should never have...
Roshan glances over his shoulder toward Tremaine's room, then closes his eyes and lowers his head.
I'm sorry, he says.
I'm glad you weren't there.
Can you see him through the window?
Roshan nods.
His bandages are bloody. The doctors say they're waiting for the swelling to go down, but they don't know when that'll be.
They said he's incredibly lucky the bullet hit the way it did. A tiny bit to the left or right, and he would have arrived dead on the scene. I think of Jax's promise that she'd shot Tremaine with a glancing blow. She'd kept her word after all.
What happened?
Asher asks as he wheels over to us, followed by Hammy. Other players, the Demon Brigade, a smattering of other teams, have shown up too, filling the waiting area with an awkward gaggle of rivals. So I keep my voice down and tell my teammates as much as I can. That Tremaine and I had gone to the Institute, and that everything went completely wrong. But I don't tell them about Sasuke. I can't handle the thought of bringing them any closer to real danger.
You have to stop, Hammy says to me as I finish. That could be you in there, too. It could be so much worse.
I want to listen to her, but tonight I'm seeing Hideo. The closing ceremony happens in 2 days. We're out of options. There's simply no time to stop anymore. All I can do is nod weakly at her. She can see the lie in my eyes, but she doesn't press me. As we settle into our chairs in the waiting room, I find myself staring at the date in my view. When the closing ceremony game starts, everything will either end or become a living nightmare. Hideo isn't at his home tonight, at least not the one I remember. Instead, the car he sends for me takes me across the bridge spanning Tokyo Bay, where the ocean meets the city and the reflections of skyscrapers trembles against the water. Tonight, the bridge is entirely lit with the colors of the Phoenix Riders, and through my lenses, cruise ships and tourist ferries dotting the harbor have a smattering of hearts and stars hovering over them. The scarlet Phoenix Rider lights reflected against the ocean look like blood spreading across the water, and the cityscape like millions of shards of glass. I focus down at my lap instead, where I'm pressing my hands tightly against each other. We travel along the waterfront until we leave most of the boats behind and enter a quiet stretch of luxury high-rises. Here, a team of security guards waves the car through a gate, and when it finally stops at the end of a dock, more bodyguards in suits come to open the door for me. I step out of the car and stand facing the water, breathing in the salty air, my lips parted at the sight. Floating serenely before me is the largest yacht I've ever seen. The entire ship is matte black, blending in with the night, save for the lines of soft silver lights running along each deck and the trails of fairy bulbs strung across the top.
Mr. Tanaka has been waiting for you,
one of the bodyguards says to me. He holds a gloved hand out, gesturing for me to step onto the ramp leading up to the yacht. I nod wordlessly, suddenly queasy with anticipation and dread, then head up to the ship's lower deck and into its interior. The space opens up into a two-floor-high ceiling, where a chandelier dripping with crystals hangs. Floor-to-ceiling glass walls, tinted for privacy, line the chamber, and at the far end is a set of double doors already open, inviting me in. I walk to them, stopping hesitantly at the entryway to peer into the vast suite beyond. The lighting is dim, the walls made of more tinted glass that reveals the outline of the city against the water. Thick white rugs and plush divans dot the space. Sheer pearlescent curtains glide idly in a sea breeze from an ajar window, under which lies a low, luxurious bed. The space is as immaculate as I remember Hideo's main home being, at least until I see the broken porcelain on the floor. Watch your step. Hideo's familiar voice drifts from across the room, where he's heading in from the balcony with a dark jacket slung over his shoulder. He tosses it unceremoniously onto a nearby chair. In the low light, all I can see of him is his tall silhouette and the silver of his hair. But I can still tell that his shirt is uncharacteristically rumpled, his sleeves rolled up haphazardly, and his collar pushed up. The shadows cover his expression entirely. What happened? I ask. He straightens and walks toward the long couches, coming slightly into the light as he goes. I'll sweep it up in a bit, he replies, his classic habit of answering without answering. My eyes dart straight to his hands. His knuckles are an angry red, cut up and crusted over with blood. Dark circles rim his eyes. Has he been here since that night at the art museum, agonizing over all I'd told him? I've never seen him so weary, like his whole heart is struggling underneath a great weight. I take a seat across from him, then wait until he leans forward and regards me with a piercing stare. You brought us here, he says quietly. So tell me, what do you know about my brother? No need for small talk tonight. In his voice is an anger I remember only from the night Jax had attempted to assassinate him, when he'd leaned over his injured bodyguard and ordered the rest of his men to find the culprit. Even that night is nothing compared to now. I feel like I'm staring into a void that has opened up inside him, threatening to swallow him whole. I don't answer right away. There are no words I can say to ease us into this conversation. Instead, I link with him and bring up a screen to show him a memory I'd saved of my first encounter with Zero, of him in my hotel room. Hideo just stares at his brother's face. There is a whirlwind of emotion in his eyes, first disbelief that this person could possibly be him, then recognition, because there is no question that this young man is the same little boy who disappeared so many years ago. How did you find out? He finally asks. I figured it out after the final game. After I left your suite, I go on, wanting to fill the heavy silence. The hack I pulled at the end to stop him also exposed his identity, and that was when I saw his name. It's not him. I bring up a second video of Zero, this time of us walking side by side as he escorts me to my room. It's him, I insist in a quiet voice. Hideo stares at him for a long time. He stares until it seems he may have frozen solid. What? His voice breaks for a moment, and I feel my own heart crack at the sound. I don't think I've ever heard him falter like this. What happened to him? I sigh, running a hand through my hair. I shouldn't be the one to tell you this, I reply.
But your brother, when he disappeared, he was very ill. Your mother had, in desperation, entered him into an experimental trial that had a chance of curing him. Hideo shakes his head at me. No, he replies. My parents would have told me. Sasuke was playing in the park with me on the day he vanished. I'm only telling you what I know. As Hideo looks on, I show him each recording I'd duplicated in chronological succession. The testing room in the Innovation Institute with a child at every desk. The hopeful, worried faces of Hideo's parents peering in from the window. The private meeting between Dana Taylor and Mina Tanaka. The small silhouette of Sasuke, cowering in the corner of a room. Of him begging to go home to his family. The bright blue scarf wrapped around his neck. His friendship with Jax and all the moments they spent huddled together. The way he tried to negotiate with Taylor for his freedom, paid the price of his scarf, and then failed to escape. The slow, gradual, crippling disappearance of his identity with each new procedure done to him. Of Sasuke becoming less of a person and more a series of data. The truth behind Project Zero. I expect Hideo to tear his eyes away at some point, but he doesn't. He watches all of it in silence, his stare never shifting away from his brother as Sasuke ages a little in each video and loses more of himself. As Taylor takes away Sasuke's scarf, as Sasuke watches his brother's first public announcement, each scene rips a gash in Hideo's heart. When the recordings finish, Hideo doesn't say a word. I fixate on the dried blood on his knuckles. The silence roars in our ears like a living thing. Sasuke died years ago. Hideo finally whispers into the dark, echoing the words Jax had said to me. He's gone from this world, then. I'm so sorry, I whisper back. The heavy weight that has been crushing his heart, the polite, stiff distance, all the careful shields he'd always put up one by one, gives way. His shoulders sag. He lowers his head into his hands, and suddenly, he starts to weep. That weight was the burden of not knowing, of years and years of anguish, of imagining the thousands of things that could have happened, of wondering whether his brother might ever walk back through the door. Of all those countless iterations he'd made of his memory, trying to figure out how Sasuke could have disappeared, it was the silver strand of an unfinished story. There's nothing I can say to comfort him. All I can do is listen to his heart break over and over again. When there are no more tears left, Hideo sits in silence and stares out the windows. He looks lost in a fog, and for the very first time, I see uncertainty in his eyes. I lean forward and find my voice. Even though Sasuke is gone from this world, I murmur softly. He's still alive in another. Hideo doesn't answer, but his lashes lower as his gaze turns toward me. Zero is Taylor's creation, I go on. My voice sounds deafening. He's tethered to her in every sense of the word. Just as your algorithm controls those who wear the new Neuralink lenses, Taylor controls Zero's data. His mind. But Sasuke isn't gone. I think he reached out to me through Zero because he's trapped somewhere in that darkness, crying for help. Hideo winces visibly. He still says nothing. I put a hand on his arm hesitantly. Hideo, Taylor's after your Neuralink. Her people are behind every recent attack against it. Let them come. Hideo's words are a quiet and clear threat. He rises from the couch, turns away from me, and walks toward the window. There,
He puts his hands in his pockets and stares out at the city on the water. My words fade away. After a while, I push my